not part of the record. But...
Now we're on the record.
And just remind me about what this year's for.
Okay, again, our this year, are we dedicating this year also to
your
tier
1?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. What's her name? Okay, so this year is dedicated to Lalitha Shamo Shubanis Vas Shmuel. Okay. This year is also dedicated to the economic recovery of our community as well as other communities, both in the Jewish community and as well as in the rest of the world. Okay, so this week's shiur is very interesting. The topic, as you see on the title here, Privacy and Confidentiality and Halacha, is a topic which really lends itself to a lot of different types of scenarios which we might put under this category, and yet, as you see from the scenarios here, you might be able to figure out the halachic issues involved in some of them are very different from each other, meaning they don't all fall under the same category of halacha and trying to figure out whether something is a problem halachically or not a problem. There are a number of different issues that have to be discussed in different scenarios. What we're going to do here is focus mainly on one or two central issues in terms of confidentiality, and then the other scenarios here and one or two other cases that come up that are slightly different in terms of their halachic focus, we'll focus on at the end for a couple minutes, but we're not going to go into all of the details and all the sources just because there's just a lot of material and we can't really focus on all of them. Okay, so we're going to start with sources on the central issue, just the main issue of what we'll call confidentiality. If somebody tells you something, and you'll see in a minute that what types of cases this will apply for. If somebody tells you something, so are you allowed to tell other people something that has been revealed to you? That's question number one. Question number two, do the rules change when the topics involved have to do with Lashon Hara? Meaning, is it any worse? Presumably it will be, but we'll discuss the details. Is it any worse if somebody tells you a piece of information which is negative about somebody else, something having to do with another person, which perhaps you did or did not want to know? Do the rules of revealing that information to somebody else, are they more severe, and if so, how, than the regular case of confidentiality of revealing other types of information? In the scenarios, just so we can orient ourselves here, so for now, we're going to skip scenarios one and two, and really three also. We'll come back to three somewhere along the way. For now, the main sources that have to do with this issue are really more focused on issues number four and five, scenarios number four and five. If you take a look here, so I'm sure we can give a lot of other scenarios that are also included in these categories, but in the scenario, let's say scenario number four or five, these are really issues that certain kinds of professionals have to deal with.
Why don't you read the scenario?
Okay. We'll read them outside if you like.
For the recording.
Okay. I am a school psychologist. One of the students has just confided in me that they are taking drugs. I would like to try to help them by speaking to their parents or to a specialist, but I promised them I would not tell anyone. What should I do? What can I do? And the next scenario, one of my clients has just revealed to me, their accountant, that their company is about to go bankrupt. I know that there is a mitzvah of preventing harm to another Jew by warning, in this case, to warn my friend that he should not invest in his company. The problem is, if I do this, if I warn my friend, I may never be hired as an accountant again. What should I do? Can I tell him? Should I tell him? Am I not allowed to tell him?
Does it make a difference that in number four, it's your job for someone to confide in you and then to help them? Whereas number five, the accountant, you don't necessarily expect your client to tell you you're about to go bankrupt. It's not part of your job.
Okay.
To
excellent question.
The detailed financial information.
Your accountant might find that out from what he finds in the books, but as a psychologist, you're expecting somebody
to confide
in you.
Right.
At
the same time, is an accountant expected to be revealing the information to somebody else other than the IRS, or Israeli taxes, whatever?
What's interesting, though, in the States at least, there's an attorney-client privilege, but I don't think there's an accounting-client privilege.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, that's actually very important, which we'll come back to a little bit later. In theory, the answer should be that it shouldn't make a difference, but we'll see that it will. Yeah.
That's a different scenario.
Is it obvious that there is a mitzvah of preventing harm to another Jew?
Good question also. The answer is that it's not entirely obvious, but at the end of the day, there definitely are posts, which we'll discuss in a couple of minutes, that do definitely hold that is a mitzvah. We'll come back to that. All right? We'll come back to all these points. Okay, let's start with the first aspect of this. In source number one, we will see that there's actually a general idea that disclosing information is not appropriate, regardless of Lashon Hara. Let's take a look here. The first couple lines we don't have to really deal with in depth. It's very interesting. We won't go into it now. Basically, the first couple lines, the Gemara says that they shouldn't say something to somebody unless he tells you to speak first, unless he says, please speak, or he gives you permission to talk to him. The Gemara says that you shouldn't start off on your own. That we're not going to talk about now. It's a very interesting discussion in and of itself. We're going to start the second to last line from the bottom in source number one, which is the Gemara in Yuma Daf Dalet Amud Beis. So the Gemara says, the Gemara darshins the first pasuk in Sefer Vayikra. The Torah says, Vayikra el Moshe, that Hashem spoke to Moshe, by Daber Hashem Elav, Hashem spoke to him, Me'ohol Moed, from the Ohol Moed, Lay More, saying. So the implied question in the Gemara is, why does it say Lay More? This is a question anytime the Torah really says, Vayomer Hashem Moshe Lay More. The Gemara here darshins it specifically from this pasuk. We'll see in a second why that is. But that's the question. When it says, Vayikra Hashem Elav, Hashem spoke to him, why do you need the extra word lay more, saying? What does that add? So the Gemara Darshans, third line from the bottom, right in the middle of the line after the period, lay more, what does it mean lay more? Amar Rabbi, somebody, either Rabbi Menasya or Rabba, whoever it is, minayim la'omer davar l'chaver shehu b'val yomer. How do we know that if somebody tells you something, some important piece of information, let's say somebody tells you a little secret about a certain company that maybe you shouldn't know, or anything really, any type of information about himself, which is not necessarily Lashon Hara, about your plans for the next week, that whatever it is, he just tells you, guess what? Do you know what's going to happen next week? I am going to be going away, or I'm going to be doing it this at A, B, or C, or this company is planning on investing in some specific project. So how do we know that you are not allowed to tell anybody else that piece of information? And the implication of the Gemara, as the Gemara says, sorry, explicitly, ad sheyomar lo leich emor, until he tells you, go tell somebody. Again, it's not saying that he has to tell you, don't tell anybody. The Gemara is saying, as long as he does not say, tell somebody, the implied assumption, the assumed rule is that you cannot tell anybody. How do we know that? Shenemar, as the Torah says, Vayidaber Hashem Elav, Me'ohol Moed, Lay More. This word of Lay More, that Hashem spoke to Moshe from the Ohol Moed, Lay More, saying. So what's the drasha here? How does the Gemara derive from this pasuk that you're not allowed to tell, to disclose information, unless the person that gave you the information tells you that you're allowed? Anybody want to take a guess here where they got this from? How does Lay More teach you this?
Lay More is going and telling Moshe to tell other people.
Okay, good. How does that teach you that only if he was told that he can tell everybody else? That's what the Gemara is trying to say here. That's only because
he was told.
So I already stacked the deck before. I already gave you one pshat, which is actually not Rashi's pshat here. It's the pshat of the Meiri. So the Meiri says that just the repetition of the word Lemur in addition to Vayidaber Hashem Elav teaches you what the Gemara is saying here. That even though Hashem spoke to Moshe, Hashem told Moshe, the halachos, in this case of Sefer Vayikra, Moshe was not allowed to tell the Bnei Yisrael until Hashem said Lemur. Meaning if the word Lemur had not been there, Moshe would not have been allowed to tell the Bnei Yisrael the halachos that he heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only because of the word Lemur do we learn that Moshe was allowed and instructed to tell the Jewish people. That's how the Meiri understands the Gemara. Rashi has a slightly different interpretation here. Rashi says, if you look at source number two, the Divrei HaMaskil is a little bit jumbled here, but basically it should be B'val Yomar. Tavol Amar Leimor, the Torah says Leimor, Lo Amor Hadvarim, don't say these things, Elim Kei Nosim Lo Rishus, unless somebody gives you permission. So according to Rashi, the interpretation here is not based on the repetition of Leimor, it's rather on the linguistic qualities of Leimor. Leimor is a combination of two words, Lo amor, meaning unless you're told otherwise, lo amor, you cannot disclose information that you have. Okay, that's Rashi's interpretation. There may be certain practical differences, but in general, I think Rashi and Amiri pretty much will agree on the halachas here. Now, any questions so far? This is just the basic Gemara. Very interesting Gemara. Again, the rule is that unless he tells you that you're allowed to tell somebody, if your friend gives you information, you can't go around telling the entire world. The question is, what do we do with this Gemara? So this Gemara is not quoted, as far as I know, in the Rambam or in the Shulchan Aruch. Very, very interesting. But yet, it surfaces a little bit later in the Magen Avraham. If you take a look in source number three, the halacha here is in the Shulchan Aruch and Or HaChaim, a general halacha about what you do after you go to shul in the morning. And the Gemara says, the Shulchan Aruch says, "Achar kach yelech li'iskav." After you've gone to shul, you've learned a little bit of Torah, then you should go work, go to business. T'chol Torah sh'eni ma'malacha sofa b'teil v'goras avon. Any Torah that you learn that does not involve malacha as well, meaning that you don't work together with your learning, eventually the Torah will be batel, will be nullified, v'goras avon, will cause sin because you have nothing to do with yourself, you're too bored. Ki ha'oni yaviren al das kono. That if you're poor, if you can't make a living, then that's going to force you to violate other types of prohibitions, which Hashem would not like. Ulikomakom, he says, lo yasa malachto ikar ela arai. But the Shulchan Aruch says, make sure that your malacha is your not your main point, meaning the main reason why you're here is to learn Torah, but your work is something which is important as well, so you need to do it. But that's not the main goal. The main goal is the learning. This is not our discussion for now. The only reason I mention this here is because of the next line here. The Torah, so Keva, your Torah is your main part. V'zevzei is kayim biyado, and hopefully you'll get both. If you learn well and you go do your business well, hopefully both will succeed. V'yisav yitin v'emuna. This is the line I wanted to just mention here because it deals with our topic of business ethics. You should basically do business be'emuna. What does be'emuna mean? Look at the Mishnah Berurah in source number 4. Haynu shelo yimtzav isko shum gezel v'tarmis. It means that you should not be stealing or other types of prohibitions. Including interest and all sorts of different kinds of cheating and inaccuracies when you are doing business. The Gemara says that when you get up to Shemayim, so one of the questions you're going to be asked is Nasata v'nasata v'emuna. Did you deal in business properly? Were you honest in your business dealings? So that's what the Shulchan Aruch means here. You have to be honest in your business dealings, and that's why we mentioned it here, because that's obviously our topic of business ethics. Now, in this context, the Magen Avraham cites a number of scattered maimras throughout Shas, different things in the Gemara that have to do with this kind of topic, all sorts of different things he discusses here. One of the things the Magen Avraham mentions is our Gemara. He quotes our Gemara, Lehalacha. Source number 5, Parakama, Diyoma, Minayim Lomar Lachadera, Dorashu, Baval Yomar. How do we know that if you say something to your friend that he's not allowed to tell anybody, Achi Yomar Lalecha, more until he tells you that you should tell somebody? So then he quotes the Drasha of Le Mor. That's what the Magen Avraham quotes here. He adds in another line, which we are not going to have time to explicate fully in the shir, but you'll see that it's here. He says, "V'im ha'omer masir shelo lomar." If the person tells you, "Don't say it," he actually says, "Please don't tell anybody." Right? Afilo amr b'fnei rabim yesh b'mishum lashon hara. Then, even if I told all of you, let's say I told all of you a secret here, that we're planning on starting a kol for balabatim yad b'yamin. Okay, but for some reason I told you that I don't want you to tell anybody right now. It's not set yet. We don't know what's going to happen. It might fall apart, whatever it is. I told a group of 15 people, don't tell anyone. So the Magen Avraham says that even though I told all of you the same thing, if I told you explicitly that you can't tell anybody, then the Magen Avraham says it's still a problem, and he says it's a problem of Lashon Hara. So we're not going to go into this now. What may be behind the Magen Avraham statement here is an issue of Lashon Hara, not an issue of just confidentiality, but rather an issue of Lashon Hara, which is a discussion in the Gemara. If I tell Lashon Hara about somebody else, I tell a deep, dark secret about... Take your pick here. Yitz. About Yitz, okay? I predicted that Yitz was going to lose his job right before it happens, right? Sorry. Okay. now I shouldn't go there, right? So even if I told 15 people that, so maybe what the Magen Avraham means here is that if I told you that you can't tell anybody, even though I told 15 people, everybody knows about it now, still nobody else is allowed to tell anybody. So we're not going to have time to really go through that entire point here. But it's very, very interesting and has to be thought about a little bit. For now, what we get from the Magen Avraham is that there's a general issue of confidentiality. I mean, confidentiality, according to the Torah, is not something which is related specifically to the profession that you have or to the fact that your client, let's say, makes you promise that you have strict confidentiality where it's assumed. The Gemara says and the Magen Avraham says that's all the time. Unless he tells you can tell people, you have to assume that you can't tell anybody. That's number one. Now, let's say, in that type of situation, can anybody think of a good example of this where it's not an issue of Lashon Hara, but it would be an issue of important of confidentiality? Let's say any type of example that you can give that's better than the ones I can think of. Let's say, think of a company that you have important information. Let's say like this, okay? Let's go back to one of the scenarios. Okay, go back to scenario number 3. All right, so in scenario number 3. So, company A just fired me. Company B has offered me a job and then are the direct competitor to Company A. Sorry, they are the direct competitor to Company A. I signed a non-compete clause or non-disclosure agreement with Company A when I began my employment. Can I go to work for Company B? So what would you answer here?
Go for it.
Yeah. You say yes?
Really?
Yeah.
Now let me ask you a question.
Unless when you they terminated your employment, they required you to sign another document saying.
Okay, so let me ask you a question. So this is more for the legal end now. How does it work when you sign a non-compete clause? Let's say when you are hired by a company, what does that mean at the end of the day when they fire you or let you go?
So
the next year.
It depends on the clause.
Okay.
It depends on whether the clause is. Is specific to your area of expertise, the geographical area. But not if it's you can never work for any company again in the world,
you can't work for any other company for the next 6 months that deals directly with what we're working.
Yeah, time specific.
Now, what happens in that case if you.
It also depends on the seniority of the person, typically.
Okay.
Right.
Senior they are, more strict.
And actually, typically, what we do in contracts today is that we say that a percentage of your salary is consideration for the fact that you're entering into this non-competition and non-solicitation clause, and therefore, if there's an issue, the company has an automatic clawback.
Does it matter if you leave or you're fired?
No, doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Does it matter who you sign the non-compete clause with?
What does that mean?
If it's going to Curves.
I don't think it should matter.
Curves International makes us sign a non-compete clause that I can't open a gym and pick up kick afterwards. Right? If I finish up with Curves and I want to open up a new gym, and are they allowed to tell me I can't have a Parnassa now because I signed a non-compete clause with Curves in Texas?
Good question. I don't think that the Jews or non-Jews will matter. What will matter is whatever the power of the no-compete clause is, meaning if included in that clause is anywhere in the world. Again, I don't know how this, you have to tell me how this works. Meaning if the...
You signed a clause.
Right.
You find a loophole in that clause.
Okay, one second. Let's wait on the loophole.
To look for loopholes.
Okay. Good question. Okay. Let's hold off on the loopholes. Let's get the basic rule first, and then we'll try to discuss the issue of
they're
loopholes.
They're not loopholes, they're profits.
All right, be careful.
The other thing is that lots of non-compete clauses are actually invalid as written. Typically, most people don't actually find that out until it's actually tested.
What does that mean, that it's not valid
as
written?
Okay, so
you know what?
EU
laws are like freedom of trade, and you know, this restricts the person's ability to not then have employment wherever they want.
Okay, that's a good question. I can tell you.
Yeah, and you can't have the same non-compete clause in effect for your CEO as you do for your T-boy. You know, there has to be a measure here. There has to be a measure of sensible practice, and it's also about the non-compete clause has to serve a purpose. I.e., you must know something so valuable to our company that if you were to go to work for a competitor tomorrow. Our company would be in danger. Therefore, we can justify saying that over a period of 6 months, maybe even a year, you shouldn't work for a competitor, and that is reflected in the salary that we're paying you.
Okay. Do any no-compete clauses discuss using information that you have rather than just working for the company? Meaning they would allow you to work for a company, but they would just say, well, if you work for the competitive company, you cannot reveal any strict confidential information that you gained from working at our company.
Regardless of whether you go work for someone else.
Say again?
Regardless of whether you then go work for someone else, the information is all theirs and it's their intellectual property and you've got no right to use any of it after you leave.
Okay, so let's focus on this just for a minute and then we'll try to deal with some of the other, the other cases that are the more detailed cases. So the basic rule here is as follows. According to what we've said so far, let's take it this way. One would get the impression, presumably, according to what we've said so far, that perhaps even if you don't sign any clause, that it should be prohibited to go and use information that you've gained in a different company for your next job. Now, what I mean to say is not information that you just know intellectually. What I mean to say is certain specific information, not an understanding of how things work and, you know, just you know certain facts that you learned from this company that you now are going to use to help the competitor. So let me just finish this and then we'll work on the details. I just want to get the basic principle out here. So based on what we've said so far, one could have thought that any specific information, you know what this company does in situation X, Y, and Z, they do this. Do you know which investments they make in this type of situation? This and this and this and this. So one would have thought, based on what we've seen so far, that that would be problematic based on this prohibition of Baal Tomer, according to the Mogen Avraham, that you would not be allowed to reveal information, specific facts or information that you learned from somebody else, unless they told you that it was okay. That's what you might have said so far. Again, we'll hold up on the questions, and you'll attack me in a few minutes. Okay, when I finish the basic points, we'll try to sharpen this a little bit. Just for the principles, though, that's what we would have thought so far. However, even that is not so clear. If you look at source number 6, which is basically a summary, so what I put here is Rav Lech quotes Rav Yisrael Eli, and in the Tchumen article, I actually found Rav Gorin also says this pretty much straight out, that the discussions we've had so far about Baal Tomer, about not revealing confidential information, unless they allow you to reveal it, is only referring to a situation where there's no benefit whatsoever. But if there is possible financial benefit that you can get from that type of information, then certainly you would be allowed to use that information. And Rav Yisrael Eli, which I did not find there, but Rav Gorin certainly agrees with this as well, says that that's what we call midas sedom. The Gemara talks about a midas sedom, that certain people that don't want to give use of their material or their information, their intellectual knowledge, even though they won't lose anything from it, they're called, we call them kofen al midas sedom. We want them to do that if other people can gain from it. So what they're saying here, according to Rav Leich and Rav Yisrael Eli and Rav Gorin, is that any person that will not be damaged or lose from giving information to somebody else, any information that you derive from them, that you glean from them, you would be allowed to use for your own personal financial benefit. The only time that it would be prohibited is if it will harm the other person or the other company, which, again, on the basic level, we'll discuss the details and sharpen this in just a minute, but on a basic level, presumably what that would mean is that, let's say, for example, I gave this example this afternoon, which is a crude example, you'll get the point. Let's say that, you know, somebody, one of the mashgichim that works for Coca-Cola, okay, there are a few rabbanim, maybe two in the world, that know the secret recipe of Coca-Cola. They may not know the actual proportion of the ingredients, but they know what the ingredients are. They know all the secret ingredients. Let's say Rabbi Ganak, or whoever else it would be, goes to Pepsi and says, I will give you the secret ingredients of Coke for the sum of $300 million, whatever it is. So in that case, even though it's for, what'd you say? He will be assassinated. That's probably true. They won't know who did it, but, I mean, they'll know who did it, but. Again, it's just a crude example. What'd you say? That's maybe you should do it anyway, right? Anyway, so you get the point. The point is that in that case, even though it's for a financial benefit, because that would certainly potentially harm the original company, in that case, the prohibition of Baal Yomar, of confidentiality, of disclosing information like that, would still be in effect. So that's, in terms of the principle, that's what seems to be the principle here. That as long as you won't cause anybody else harm, then it would be permitted to use information for financial gain. But if it would damage other people or cause them to lose out on business, things like that, then it would seem to be prohibited to use that type of actual facts or information to disclose that to somebody else. I don't know if we want to go through this now, but I'll summarize for you the Gemara in source number 7. There's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, which is very, very fascinating. Basically, Rabbi Yochanan got sick. Second. Let's just do the Gemara first, and then we'll go through the details. Okay, we'll try to work out all the cases we discussed before, practically speaking. So the Gemara, I'm not going to read it inside now, but basically Rabbi Yochanan here in this case was a little bit ill. He went to a certain woman, and basically she found some sort of cure for him. At the end of the day, basically she wanted him to promise her, to swear to her that he would not reveal to anybody else what the cure was. Now, the way Rabbi Bleich understands this is a bit of a question, but it seems to be that she was not getting any money for this. She was not paid for this, but she wanted to keep the intellectual rights of what the cure was to herself. Apparently, at the end of the day, he swore to her. He says, Ishtavala lo kal Yisrael lo magalina. He says, he swore to the God of Israel that I won't reveal it. The next day, he goes out and gives his Shabbos afternoon drusha, and guess what he says in his Shabbos afternoon drusha? He gives all the information of exactly how to make the cure that the woman told him yesterday that he can't do. So the Gemara says, I'm just quickly reading now in the third line, they're right in the middle, right? He said he swore to her he wouldn't do it. How could he do that? The answer is he used a little bit of a white lie here. Lo kal di Yisrael lo maglina. Ami Yisrael maglina. He says, I promised that I would not reveal to the God of Israel what the nature of the cure was. But for the Jewish people, that's not the God, it's the people themselves, that he was allowed to. So the Gemara says, "Well, ikah chilah Hashem, isn't that a chilah Hashem?" The answer is the goli la meikara. Apparently, at some point along the way, he already told her in some form. He already explained to her that he was going to reveal it to other people because apparently he felt that other people should have access to this cure as well. And then after that, she still made him promise that he wouldn't tell her, and that's when he used this expression of la loka yisrael lo magalina. So Rabbi Bleich and Rav Gorin both suggest from this Gemara that this is a good proof to the point that they made before. As long as there's no financial damage to the other person. Again, they're assuming that in this case, the woman was not being paid for her services. She was doing it for free. In that case, there's no problem with anybody else knowing the cure. It's to everybody else's benefit, and she doesn't lose anything, at least financially.
The only thing you're concerned about is financial?
That's what it seems
what
to be.
What if she's a sad, lonely old woman? The only way she has friends and people visit her is to get the cure.
Okay, good question. I could hear that would be similar. I could hear that that would be the same thing. I don't think that's the case here, but I could hear that would be equivalent to financial damage. I would agree to that.
But over here,
okay. Yeah.
Was going to suffer financial damage because
it
she wouldn't
seems,
be able to sell the cure afterwards?
It sounds like she's not planning on selling it. Again, you can't
so
prove this from
like
the Gemara.
You work for a pharmaceutical company.
Yeah, no. If it's going to cause, the assumption is that if you would go work for somebody else and they would lose money off that, then that would probably be usur. Again, you can't prove 100% from the Gemara that's the case, but Rabbi Bleich and Rav Goren suggest that it's not talking about financial compensation, and it makes sense because it never says anywhere that she was getting paid for this. It doesn't mention that, so I think that's a good assumption, but again, you know, it is arguable. One could disagree with that if you wanted to read it some other way. Okay, so now, sorry.
Yes. You sort of that it's similar, the same deal of selling and acting upon information.
Okay.
Is that something which is obvious? I could say that what's forbidden is to start saying, you know this and this, they did this and this, but acting upon based on information which they have might not be also bichlan. I know that they did a research about this is the specific demographics that we have to focus on in order to market this product. I know if a company is selling a similar product, I'm going to plan the marketing.
You're talking about research that they did that was not publicized, right?
Yes. And I'm going to do my marketing campaign based on this demographics, for instance, just something like that. I'm not repeating anything. I've got information. Based on this information, I'm focusing my work in a very specific direction, so I'm saving money to the new company, for instance, or whatever. But
you're talking about a case even where the other company is going to get some sort of loss because of the work done by the new company.
Even if they
okay.
Loss. I'm not saying anything. I'm just using information in order to be more efficient.
Okay, I hear what you're saying. It's a good question. It's a good question. I could hear a distinction
so
between those two things, but
causes the other company to release a product before the other competitor comes.
Right. I understand. Understood. Okay, that's a good example. Meaning, in that case, let's say the second company is gonna. This happens sometimes, right? That the second company bases themselves on the information, the research done by the first company, which wasn't publicized yet, but somehow they found out, and they use that information to race ahead. And
because I was head of that,
Right.
I'm not the people, I didn't say anything.
Right.
They don't even know how I've got this stroke of genius to do it like that.
Right. So, I don't know. I could hear the distinction that you're making. Personally, I would have thought that the whole point here, again, this is not set. Maybe we could do a little more Ian into this point, and maybe there's room to say what you're saying. I would have thought that that's also problematic. Even if you can't say it's directly Baal Yomar, but if you're using other people's knowledge that you should not have gotten, not that, you know, meaning if you got it in a dishonest way, if you use dishonesty in order to...
I will
okay, good. So you were fired. And let's say in this case, again, at this point, we're not talking about any compete clauses yet. Right now we're talking about there's no such thing as a no compete clause. So in that case, if you were fired, so then to use the information for a financial gain for the other company that would damage the first company,
do
I don't know.
You're saying taking your knowledge and going after the client base of your first company. So you know where to market your material.
Right. Yeah.
That's what
you're
saying. You know where to market your
material.
Yeah.
I understand. So I don't know. I understand. I would have thought if you follow the logic of what the source is. Again, it's true that this is a Gzeiras HaKasher. This is based on a drusha that the Gemara gives here. So it's not clear that you can expand this. But I would have thought that based on the logic that the Gemara's thrust would have included that case also, because it's the same problem. I mean, you're causing somebody else, you know, significant damage, but you're not allowed from other areas, you're not allowed to damage somebody, to cause somebody else damage, financial damage, in a way which was, you know, through dishonest means.
It's
tzarichin on that point, okay? That's a tzarichin. I'll see if what else I can find out about that point. My initial thought would be that that's problematic, but let's I understand. From the Gemara itself, from the Gemara of Baal Yomar, I think you're right, that you can't prove from there that it's problematic. The problem is that there are other sources that do discuss this type of idea of doing things that are damaging to other people to ruin their businesses, and that's what has to be researched a little more to see what the halacha would be in that case.
I'll
see if I can find more information on that, and we'll see what we can find. But my initial thought would be that probably would still be problematic.
Okay.
Okay, we'll leave that at Sarachian. I'll see what we can
That's find. Not about competing. That's about ownership of the intellectual property itself.
And, you're right.
And
okay, so
certainly it's standard practice today that, you know, when you're working for a company, the company owns the information, whatever that information is and however it is created and whomever creates.
I hear what you're saying. Okay, so...
Imagine I work for a supplier at Walmart, and I know that the discount Walmart negotiated with me is 20%. And I go and work for a direct rival, and I know that the discount is 15%. I know the information. It's not written anywhere. I just know that data.
Right.
I'm going to use that. You're telling me I know the data. I can't use it. It's just imprinted on my brain. It's not a contract.
That's why
you're
right.
Mean, it's,
what?
That's why you were hired.
Hey,
you
were saying. You were saying.
Because you're basically saying you can't get that job.
It was based in the US.
Because if you don't carry
that job, you're going to use that.
If you don't use it.
One second, just one at a time here.
Yeah.
Sorry, Kai.
You have to apply to a company and basically use the information to start up your own company and compete in the same market.
Right.
And obviously, the original company took them to court. But basically, they won in the end because, according to the laws of where they were operating, any trade secrets had to actually be documented as trade secrets. Okay? I.e. the company had that printed material that this is a trade secret.
Right.
So there wasn't necessarily a non-disclosure clause, but there was some sort of standard din in the state.
Understood.
Would that affect...
Understood. Okay, so that's we need to discuss more also. It definitely is very likely that Dina de Malchusa Dina, that the secular law will play a very significant role here. If the secular law permits you up to a certain point to use that information, then that would be a significant factor weighing in that would probably allow you to do that. If they prohibit you from doing it, then presumably halakhali would be usr as well. That would definitely be very, very important in determining the decision what the secular law is. The other factor which is also relevant here, which we're not going to talk about now, is issues related to copyright. Some of the halacha discussions that have to do with copyright are questions about whether halacha recognizes the significance or the existence of intellectual property. And that's a big, big machlokas in the poskim. Many poskim do recognize it, and some poskim do not recognize it. It could be there are other factors as well, but it definitely could be that machlokas would also be relevant in this case if you hold that intellectual property is not actually the property of the person, and therefore anybody else who knows that information can do it with it whatever they want. It could be that in the case that you're mentioning, might be okay. And the poskim that say that intellectual property is bilus, meaning in the case of copyright, you can't just take somebody else's intellectual property and do with it whatever you want as your own property, they might say that this case also is usur. That's, again, I'm not sure, there might be other factors that have to be discussed, but that also may be a very important factor, which, again, makes it difficult because it's a big machlokas. If we talk about copyright at some later shir, we'll discuss those issues a little bit more fully.
Okay, so actually, Ben just raised an interest that prompted me to think of an example, or a real-life example that happened in our office, that we were asked to do due diligence on another company in our building.
To do what?
To do due diligence, to read through the various legal documents
okay.
of another company
okay.
in our
yeah.
building.
Okay.
And that included that company's lease. Which meant that we now know how much rent they pay.
Uh-huh.
Now in their lease it says that the lease is confidential except that it can only be disclosed to legal representatives, you know, to their legal representatives and to other parties' legal representatives in the event of a potential investment. So we had access to the information, you know, completely bona fide access to the information, and as a result of that, we now know what they pay, which means we now know whether we pay are getting a good deal or not. Which means that potentially in the future we could use
right.
that, and there's no issue of anyone being fired or non-compete
okay.
or copyright
no
or
okay.
etc.
That's the question. Okay.
Other than the owners of the building,
right.
If you're negotiating a lower lease because of information that you're finding out.
But we found out in the course of doing our job. It was our job to find out that information.
They should have worded the clause that, you know, aren't the ethics and law to prevent the other tenants
I mean, like
question.
Well,
okay.
Because you're...
We don't act for the building.
Sorry?
We don't act for the building.
Okay.
I'd say
Shaitan can use the information. Okay. Let's take a minute. We'll focus on Paul's question.
You have to create a Chinese wall.
Only
the people that were involved in it in this review of the lease cannot be involved in negotiations with the landlord. That's standard practice.
So no, but why? But what's the conflict? We don't act. Where's the conflict? We didn't act for the company.
You basically got confidential information from the landlord.
It was not confidential information because they were told that they could reveal it to legal representatives of potential investors.
But the legal representatives aren't allowed to use it against the landlord. Landlord, I would argue that whoever had access to that legal document, A, cannot disclose to other people, which is standard, a Chinese wall standard, and those people should not be involved in the negotiations with your firm.
There's a market in that building, and although you have, through your devious means, you have got insider knowledge in that market. So the question is, can you employ that insider knowledge in, you know, your activities in that market?
What?
Interesting. Okay, let me give you a couple.
Who's insider knowledge? That's a valid question.
Yeah, the apartment talks obviously went very well. Or really badly.
No, that's a question. Can I use insider knowledge? I know that the company is going to be sold.
Okay.
Profit, I'm buying stock from that company. Not telling anything to anyone, just for myself.
Right. What would the company say if you told them what you were doing?
All the lawyers have to leave.
The company wouldn't buy. The person I'm buying the shares from is going to lose out because he's sold the shares, which is going to go up 10%.
Here. Okay. Good. So let me tell you a couple points that Rabbi Willig told me when I asked him about some of these types of cases, and we'll see whether it actually fits these actual cases. So if you look at scenario number two. So scenario number two is somewhat similar to your case, I think. I don't think it's exactly the same, but it's definitely somewhat similar. Scenario number two, you are in your boss's office, and he has stepped out to make a cup of tea. On his desk in plain sight, but facing his side of the desk, is a piece of paper containing the planned promotion, salaries, and bonuses for the whole team for the next year. As you are in the middle of deciding whether to stay at the company, understanding whether or not you have been promoted and or your pay has been raised, or will be raised, will be crucial. Are you allowed to look? If it is in a file, are you allowed to open the file?
It's a setup. The guy was going to see what he's going to do. It's a setup.
My first boss told me that the first things he did was he learned to read upside down.
And that's how he became the boss, right? You'd say no what?
It's not his status in Minnesota, but it'll get
the mail.
Except that it's on his desk, and if it's in plain sight, it should be okay.
So the case here.
Desk private domain.
It's facing his side on the desk.
Something on those computer screens
is one's facing the ceiling.
How is it facing? Is it upside down or is it facing up?
Is it like this or is it like this?
That's a good question. I have no idea. It can go any situation.
So you're saying open folder one. Can't open the folder. That's what you're saying. You're saying definitely can't open the folder.
Okay. I'll tell you this.
Regarding someone else's mail, let's just go back to Rabbeinu Gershom. If it's like this, am I allowed to read it?
Good question. So. Let me tell you what Rabbi Willig said, though. His case was a little bit different. I hope I'm not misquoting him here. I'll have to check with him to make sure I quoted him correctly. If you look there, and you're not looking so carefully, but you look, you see it's there, you happen to look a little bit, and you happen to find the information that you wanted to find, Rabbi Willig felt that was something that you could use afterwards. You found it, you saw it, it was right there, okay. If you are actively looking, certainly if you're going to open the file, this part he didn't say, but I was inferring from what he said, if you actually go and open the file, or if you actually start searching or turning pages back and forth, try to find the information that you want. My impression would be that's problematic. Okay, what'd you say? So I'm saying anything like that, you can come up with all sorts of different ways of creatively trying to find the information that you want. My impression would be that you know, even if you want to put under the case of Rabbeinu Gershom, the Chayim of Rabbeinu Gershom reading other people's mail, or if you want to say that's, you know, Gezela, again, according to some people, Gezela of intellectual property might be problematic. Certainly here where it's active, you actually, maybe it's not active, but you actually actively are looking through it to find something. That also, you know, my impression was that that would be more problematic. But if it's something that you just happen to see, if it's right there and it's in front of you, okay, and you see, oh, that's an interesting document, and you look at it for a second, and you see what you needed to see, and then you walk away, but you didn't actually do anything, you know, seriously active about it, then, you know, the impression is that might be okay to use that type of information. That's a very fine line between those two things, so it's hard to give you an absolute rule for every case, but that's basically the principle.
It's problematic that you see information about yourself, I would think not, but seeing information about other people in the company...
Right, so again, I would say l'chadchila, I don't know if it's the best thing to do to start looking carefully at all the information on the screen. If you happen to look, and, okay, you look a little more than you should have, you know, so, okay, you saw it, you can, you know, that's it, you can do... You're allowed to do what you need with it. What'd you say?
Three viduis.
Yeah, meaning that's according to Rabbi Willig, at least, that once if you saw it or if you looked at it reason as a normal person would, and then you happen to see it, you know, I think he felt, if I understood him correctly, he felt that would be okay to use that information that would not be included in the prohibition of Baal Tomer. Which, if you accept that would be true in your case also. That in the case of unless you sign a document saying that anything that you found in their files you cannot use for any other information, but they know what you're reading. And you happen to see it there because you're supposed to look at the document. You saw what they were paying for rent. So then according to that rule, presumably also, you would be allowed to use that type of information for your own personal benefit. Again, if you're going to ruin their company, then that might be a different story. Maybe.
I'm saying that his case is even different. His case is, he is working, I'm not speaking about someone
paying
for one company.
Right, yeah.
He is working as a worker, as an employee of the company.
Yeah.
He's got a duty to report.
Right.
It's not, is he allowed to, is he not allowed to? It's, does he have to, is he allowed to not report? And say, so that not reporting would be causing a damage to the company. I've got information, I'm working for the company.
Good.
As
a
worker for the company, I found information useful for the company.
Right.
If I don't report it, I'm not an honest worker.
Right, okay, I agree with that. Okay, that's the principle. Again, it's a bit of a fine line, and you know, not every case is going to be 100% clear, but that would be... Which one?
There are two questions which can be asked in this...
Which scenario?
The same scenario about the fine with my salary, my raise, or like that.
Okay, yeah.
There are two questions. A, am I allowed to look?
Okay, so it could be if it's...
B,
yeah.
If I have looked, besides we know that I have looked, that I
opened
am I allowed to use that information for myself?
Right. So I think for yourself, most people would say that if it's for yourself, you would be allowed to use the information. Even if you weren't supposed to look, you would be allowed to use the information. Now, it could be that even if, you know, if it's about yourself, it could be that maybe you're allowed to look l'chadchila, depending on what the boss would say. This, by the way, is a good general rule, which we haven't discussed so much in these shiurim, but in terms of borrowing things from the office or making copies or whatever, things like that, a good general rule, which I forgot where I saw this, but I thought it was a very sound type of rule to use as a rule of thumb, what would you do if the boss was standing right there? Hopefully you'd ask him, but what do you think he would say? If you think he would say that it wasn't such a big deal and you can look because it's about you anyway, so it's not going to change very much, maybe it will. But if he wouldn't care so much, then probably it's okay. If it's the kind of thing that you would be very, very hesitant to do when he was there because you feel that he wouldn't want you to do that, then you have a little more of a problem. Again, that's a rule of thumb. It's not going to tell you every single scenario, but it's a good rule to use as a general type of rule.
In the UK right now, there's a huge scandal because a newspaper has been publishing leaked information about members of parliament's expenses.
Uh-huh.
And expenses that they have been claiming that are over the top and not connected to their work, and expenses they've been claiming that are fraudulent because, for example, they were claiming mortgage payments on mortgages that they didn't have. And as a result of that, at least two members of parliament have been suspended, and that's as a result of information that was put into the public domain, which was not supposed to be in the public domain. And what if you're the at the moment we've been talking very much from the purpose of being the employee, but what about if you're the employer and you come across some information about a member of staff or about the company comes across information about a competitor, how can the company, what can the company do if it comes across that sort of information?
Well, if it's something, if you need to protect yourself or your company, then otherwise, meaning it's something that you need to know in order to do something proper to make sure that you don't lose money, then for sure it's going to be okay. If it's something that will just cause a profit to you and damage somebody else, then it could be more of a question. To actually go and actively damage somebody with that information could be more of a question. But in terms of the lawmakers, I think that you would say that's certainly included in the case of protection, because you don't want your lawmakers using their money when they shouldn't be. That's, you know, it's legal money that was given for specific purposes, and it's damaging to the country if they're doing things that they shouldn't be. So therefore, I would think that in that case, it would probably be mutter to use that information, even if it wasn't supposed to be publicized. So I would say that's included in the case of protection. That would be my perspective.
So you're talking about saturated markets where there's a limited amount of competitors and any sort of sale that you have. De facto will be a stealing of market share.
Okay, good question. It could be there's more of a problem in that case. This topic, I think we're not going to be able to focus on so much right now. Maybe we'll have a separate shiur, and this is definitely a separate topic about these types of marketplace type tactics in terms of competition between different companies. There is plenty of material on that topic, and maybe we'll have a separate shiur hopefully a little later on that type of topic. But certainly it's not something we can just discuss in 3 seconds right now. That's a topic into itself. So, Tsarachian, and we'll, where are they? There are a few articles. If you want to see, if we never get to it, I can tell you where the some of the articles are discussed. Levine, in his books, has a number of discussions about these kinds of questions, and some of the websites also have stuff about that. So for now, we'll leave it, and if we vote that that's one of the shiur we want to have later in the next couple of weeks, then we'll do that. If not, I can tell you where everything is. Okay, good. Let's move on a little bit. Just the bottom line on scenario number three with the no-compete clause. So if you do sign a no-compete clause, so Rabbi Willigfeld, and this was, he actually said in a shiur, I didn't speak to him directly about this, but in the shiur, basically, what he felt is that anything which is covered by the clause, meaning whatever legal value, legal force that clause has, which again will depend on every situation differently, I can't tell you what everything is, but whatever the regular force of that clause will be, it is absolutely binding and you can't go against it. Okay, meaning whatever you signed, whatever that meant, again, if there are questions, oh, did it mean this or did it mean that, maybe there's room to be a little more lenient, but whatever's clear that you did sign about, you have to keep. You can't, that's certainly based on Dina de Machlus Adina, maybe based on halachic issues as well.
You also think that if you didn't sign anything, then there is no halachic...
Correct. So based on what Rabbi Willer was saying at the time, if you didn't sign a no-compete clause, he felt that you can take information. This goes back to the question we had before, which I didn't give you a definite answer about. He felt if there is no no-compete